To talk a little bit about burnout. My name is Krista Robbins, and I am a counseling psychology doctoral student here at Purdue.
My name's Ashna, and I'm also in the same program as Chris.
So today we are going to talk to you about burnout, burnout culture, and different ways and strategies for resisting both burnout and burnout culture. So we'll go ahead and dive right in. Also, please feel free to use the chat. We will try and keep an eye on it, but we will definitely have time for some Q&A towards the end. All right, so as we get started, we thought it'd be nice for you all to go ahead and maybe think for a minute and share in the chat what brought you to this presentation today. Why did you decide to sign up for a conversation about burnout? And as you go ahead and do that and kind of think and go ahead and share in the chat, Ashna and I will share a little bit about why we decided to do a presentation on burnout and what made us interested in this topic as well. So I can start. So for me, I came into graduate school pretty adamant about not letting grad school kind of consume me. I remember like saying, I resist the notion that graduate school has to take over my life. But what I found was once I actually started, that became a lot harder to uphold than I thought it would be. And grad school did start to kind of take over and create some symptoms of burnout in my own life.
Kind of like people are sharing in the chat, I am also interested in this topic because I have been feeling burned out. And we'll get to this later in our presentation, but it's kind of impossible to not be burned out as a graduate student, given everything that is expected of us. And so I think I'm really passionate about this topic so that we can reclaim whatever small joy we can as we go through these grueling few years of school.
Yes, yes. And I'm also just scrolling through the chat and seeing a lot of extended periods of burnout, it sounds like, too, feeling tired for a very long time. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're happy to have you all here, and hopefully this will be a valuable hour for you all to spend with us.
Okay, so to start off, just what is burnout? skipping ahead, Chris. And then some of the questions that came up in the Google form you all submitted was like, how is burnout different than stress? So thinking about stress to begin with, stress is usually about just one event or one situation. And then burnout is when that stress goes on for a long period of time, like y'all are talking about. It's unending and it's really intense. So the first time burnout was defined was in the 1970s, and that's the definition we see in the middle there. It can be defined as a state of mental and physical exhaustion caused by one's professional life. And here too, we can see that difference in terms of stress, where stress is usually not this deep exhaustion that comes with burnout. So as all of you think about what burnout means for you, it's important to know what your own signs of burnout are, because the ways I experience burnout is not how Chris does. So you can think about noticing your own warning signs, so to speak, across the three levels that we have on the right. So you might think about what burnout for you is in terms of your physical health. This might be that your heart rate is really increased all of the time. I'm going to pull the screen closer so I can read it. This might, you know, have an effect on your blood sugar levels. Something that affects me a lot is my digestive system. Then you would also want to look at burnout in terms of your mental health. So how irritable are you? Are you starting to like snap at the people in your life more? Maybe for you, burnout shows up in terms of having really sad symptoms. So you don't get mad at other people, you just get really sad. And maybe you cry about it at home. And then you also want to think about, okay, how is burnout affecting my spiritual health? And this might be about feeling a lack of connection to people, and then that can be really damaging. On the left here, we have some more examples of how burnout might show up in your lives. And as you can see, there's a lot of different ways that it can show up. And so it's important, like I said at the beginning, to continue thinking about, and what is burnout for me?
All right. So another thing that I think is important to think about in terms of burnout is kind of looking at some of the research that has been done on burnout. And something that has come out of this research is this 12-stage model for burnout. This was also developed in the 70s as burnout started to become a lot more of a popular topic. It was developed by some psychologists in the 70s and has pretty much stuck around as the main model for burnout since then. One important thing to note about this model is that when it was developed, it was not necessarily meant to be this full-on exact linear progression from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. It is very possible, kind of as Ashna was saying earlier, that burnout shows up differently in people. So it is also very possible that you will experience some of these stages in different orders, maybe not exactly all of them in a really clear cut way. But I think it gives a very good overview of kind of how you can see burnout start and kind of build to something a lot more serious. So I'm going to go ahead and walk us through this model so you have kind of a better understanding. And as I do that, I encourage you to kind of think about places where you can identify with some of these stages, and if there are, you know, some of the earlier stages of burnout, or if there are some of the later stages. So this first stage is called excessive ambition. So this is when you're feeling like you really want to prove yourself. And I think a lot of us feel that, especially right when we start in grad school, we kind of want to impress our advisors and our peers and really kind of prove in some way that we belong here, right? And that we earned our spot here. And that then can lead to working harder. So then we start to maybe, in attempt to prove ourselves, start to work longer hours. Our to-do list starts to get a little bit longer. It's harder to step away from that. And we start to just do more work. That can lead to stage 3, which is neglecting needs, where as your to-do list is getting longer and you're not stepping away from it very often, then your self-care starts to slip. So you might say to yourself, oh, I don't have time to cook this week, or I think I have to skip my afternoon workout because I have to finish an assignment, or either me staying up really late to finish something, or getting up really early to answer emails or whatever it is. Then this fourth stage can kind of set in, and that's the displacement of conflicts. So some of that stress that you're experiencing from schoolwork and from academics and your career really might start to get displaced in other places. So you might just start feeling kind of anxious or panicky or jittery in different times in your day. So not always when you're doing schoolwork, but it might show up when you're driving to campus. Or you might kind of become a little bit more reactionary. So maybe you are headed to your car and you realize you forgot your phone in your apartment. And you get really upset about that because you have to go back upstairs. And likely you're not actually that upset that you have to walk back upstairs, but you have so many other things kind of going, and you start to displace some of that frustration into other moments as well. Then you might move to stage 5, where you have no time for non-work activities. So you're just really, really focused on work. This might mean that you start to become dismissive to friends and family. You start to say, oh no, I don't have really time to hang out, or I can only talk for a few minutes. Hobbies start to become irrelevant, or even might seem luxurious, right? To even be able to have a hobby outside of schoolwork. And then you can move to the stage of denial, or this kind of phase of feeling like, I'm not really worrying too much, or feeling like, oh, I do have it all under control though. It's a lot, but I've got it under control. Maybe your friends and family start pointing out, hey, you know, you seem really, really busy lately, or it's been kind of hard to talk to you because you're so involved in your work. Maybe you should take a step back. And your response is, oh no, it's fine. I've got it all under control. I just need to get through this one week, right? And then I'll be fine. But that can then lead us to actually withdraw. So instead of, you know, having those conversations with friends and family minimally, we start to not really have them at all, right? And we start to withdraw from our social life, even if we do have some time to spend with friends, which, you know, is a sign of depression and a sign of some psychological changes happening. So then stage 8 is these behavioral and psychological changes. So you're actually starting to notice some changes within you. You might become more forgetful. You might have a really hard time concentrating. So maybe actually doing your work and reading is becoming really challenging for you, or writing papers just becomes really hard. And you might also have this heightened sensitivity. So again, some of that reactionary stuff might be coming up more, and you might be feeling like you're crying a lot more often, or you're feeling really emotional when something doesn't go right. And then you can move into this stage 9, which is depersonalization. And that really means you're starting to lose touch with yourself and who you are. And you start to maybe devalue yourself, or place a lot of your value just on your ability to be productive. And not only does that happen internally for you, but sometimes that starts to happen externally as well. So you start to devalue other people around you as well, and really become more of this, this depersonalization can kind of feel like you're more in a robotic mode, right? Versus being really in touch with who you are, which then can lead to these feelings of emptiness and feeling numb to a lot of things, which a lot of times we end up coping with those in really unhealthy and sometimes dangerous ways through drinking, using substances, overeating, things like that, that can really make us maybe feel a little bit better in the moment, but don't really replace some of that emptiness. And then you'll start to really experience those longer term psychological struggles, like feeling depression or feeling, you know, anxiety for a very long amount of time. And then that eventually leads to this feeling of complete burnout. So full on mental and physical exhaustion. And that looks like when you really can't do your work anymore, right? It becomes actually really impossible to do that. And this can be life-threatening because of some of the psychological damage that can be done, and even physical damage from some of those symptoms we were talking about earlier that you're experiencing. And can even lead to you feeling like you might be experiencing similar symptoms to trauma as well. So it can get very, very serious very quickly. So something else I want to mention too on this slide is this is obviously, like I said, kind of a stage model that's still really commonly used. But some of the other models that have been created really focus around less so of a stage progression, but more so kind of the combination of having a stressor or multiple stressors combined with this emotional exhaustion that you're feeling, and the sense of depersonalization as being kind of these three big factors in burnout. And all of those then leading to this mental and physical exhaustion that leads to a decrease in your actual productivity.
So that was burnout, right? And as you see in our presentation title, we wanted to separate burnout from burnout culture. Because when we only look at burnout, we only look at ourselves as individuals, and then we only think about how can I make this better for me? But burnout, as we saw through the people sharing, is something so many of us are experiencing. And that's what burnout culture tries to get at. So burnout culture is a culture in which burnout is so pervasive that experiencing burnout is accepted as normal and expected. So this is where we just expect ourselves to be burned out, we expect our friends to be burned out, and we don't see it as a problem anymore. And then, as this slide says, this has been deepened by the COVID-19 pandemic, as we're sort of promoting self-sacrifice, right? Like, wow, you're incredible for working through the pandemic, for still getting all of your work done, even though there's a pandemic, and that kind of language, which tells us you should be still working at the same level you were before the pandemic.
Okay, so we also have the slide to kind of explain demonstrate different ways that you might know or start to recognize that you're in burnout culture. So I'm looking at this left image at first, and it's also called toxic grind culture, which is really similar concept of, you know, really feeling like you have to keep pushing, keep going, stay on that hamster wheel, kind of keep spinning through your day. So when you're in burnout culture, some of these things might happen. So you might feel this, you might start to constantly work at the expense of your own mental health and not recognize that as a problem, right? Or you are in a culture that expects you to do that. This culture expects that your mental health doesn't matter as much as your work. Not being able to enjoy social functions because of work. So again, this feeling of, you know, trying to maybe go out and hang out with friends and maybe some of your peers in grad school. But there's actually just an expectation that when you get there, you're just going to talk more about school and you're just going to talk about all the things that are stressing you out. And nobody's really able to name that or see that as a problem and actually perpetuating even more burnout. Feeling like you always have to be doing something productive, right? So I think we see this all the time in burnout culture because everyone around us appears to always be doing something productive. So then we start to feel like, oh, I need to be doing something productive as well all of the time. And that's just the expectation. Skipping out on meals, sleep, and rest in order to meet deadlines. Again, sometimes we see this in our peers and we don't really question it. Sometimes I get emails from my friends at 2 a.m. doing work and just, oh, they're just, that's when they're doing work, right? Or we get emails from our advisor at 5 a.m. We think, oh man, am I not getting up early enough? I need to, you know, work harder and keep going. And that's burnout culture kind of, right? These people around you, and you're starting to kind of learn that, oh, I should be doing that too. It's expected of me to be getting up early and staying up late. As well as valuing success as a race and something that comes from the possession of things. And I'll talk a little bit more about this later, about some other cultural intersections here of burnout. But burnout culture is when you're in these systems that are telling you that your success and your value is placed on how much you are achieving, right? So these, maybe how many publications you're getting, how many the grades that you're getting, or how much money you're going to be able to make. So those are kind of ways that you can experience or start to recognize that you're in burnout culture when you kind of are looking around you and these are the things that are happening and not being questioned. But burnout culture doesn't just kind of exist on its own, right? There's other systems and structures that are supporting burnout culture. So we made this list of things that we've seen in graduate school, these policies and these kind of expectations that graduate school has put on us that are actually upholding and perpetuating this notion that we need to keep working and not take care of our mental health. So this first one is unrealistic academic expectations. I think probably many of us are asked to do, frankly, just too much, right? We just don't have the time in the day. Even if we used all of the hours, you know, at our peak ability, could not get the work done, right? But that's telling us that by demanding so many things of us, that our mental health isn't valued and that we shouldn't be valuing it either. This year, of course, we all know we didn't have our fall break and we're not having spring break this year. And although, of course, we understand the reasoning for that in terms of our physical health, the damage to our mental health is that, or the message, excuse me, that's being communicated is that we need to just keep working. So even when we need a mental health break, you cannot have it. And because we value the work that you're doing more. Same with number three, right? Lacking vacation time. So I don't know about everybody on this call, but I know from my experience and other graduate students I've talked to, it's very unclear in terms of our assistantships and things if we have any vacation time. And I think some of that being unclear is a system and a structure that is also communicating us that we don't need vacation time. You can just keep going. You don't need to actually take any time off, and we don't actually value that rest. Same with weekend meetings and working on the weekend. Although I'm sure many of you, we all do a lot of work on our own things during the weekend. But since the pandemic and maybe even before that, but I've noticed an increase since the pandemic of programs scheduling meetings on the weekends or organizations kind of meeting on the weekends and kind of no longer respecting that rest time. And again, no longer valuing that and telling you that we actually need you to be doing more and keep doing more is the message we keep getting. As well as this other, the structure of graduate schools, many of you are probably aware of, is it seems that grad students kind of get the grunt of this like trickle down effect, right? Of professors kind of not having time for stuff and saying, oh, you can you do this? You know, getting these emails from your advisors or your research team leaders or whoever, and kind of offloading some of their work onto you and just this expectation that you can do it. that's already kind of ingrained within the system of burnout culture.
So we also wanted to give all of you some time to process everything we've just shared and think about how burnout culture has shown up in your lives. So we're going to send you into some breakout rooms really quickly for about 5 minutes for you to think about your own examples of burnout culture, and then we'll come back and share with each other. So Pratik, if you could put folks into rooms of 4 to 5 people, that would be awesome.
Alrighty, so we have 43 participants, 8 rooms or 9 rooms?
Sure, yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do 8 rooms and
I'm gonna put the prompt in the chat.
I believe everyone should be able to join. There we go.
Thank you.